Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Ghoul Girls, your one-stop shop for the paranormal. And also, we're going to be mixing it up a little bit today. We're not going to be talking about paranormal, ghosts, ghouls, and cryptids. We're going to be doing what, Jessica? What are we going to be talking about today?
We're going to be talking about murder.
Murder. You guys heard it here first. Well, I'm pretty sure you guys have heard murder other places, but we're going to be talking about murder this time.
We're trying something new. You know, we're multi-talented. You know, you gotta show it off.
We're expanding our horizons. And
we're broadening our
brand. And believe it or not, I was actually going to make this into a true crime podcast, but I'm much more passionate about the paranormal. So, bada bing, bada bang.
Yeah, there but you go. I'm super excited about this episode. I think it's going to be really cool. I got good stuff, but
yes,
I think it's going to be good.
You do have good stuff. And I have good stuff. We all have good stuff. We come from a very good stuff kind of family. Jessica. Oh, man. So, Jessica, you ever known anyone to be murdered before?
No.
Me neither.
No. I think that's a good thing, though.
I did have a friend once in high school who got stabbed. But it was her own fault because she tried to rob a liquor store. But that was a different time. That was a different time.
Okay. Good thing that's not the story that we're going to be reading today in our podcast.
If not, it would have been a very short story because she lived.
Okay. So it doesn't qualify. It wouldn't be on the episode.
It wouldn't be on the episode because she did not get murdered. Anyways, updates. So first off, thank you, everyone. We've gotten so many like crazy ass responses to our Ouija board episode. Let me just throw out there.
It's been so good. Oh, I've been loving all of the feedback and the stories. Like, it's Christmas. It's an early Christmas for me.
It really is. Also, sorry, guys. We've been kind of behind on our episodes. We just had a lot of family stuff going on, you know, the holidays and everything. So we're just trying to get caught up now. We're going to try and be on our normal schedule. Jessica's actually going to do some blessings for me at my casa. So thank you for that.
It's time to get rid of your ghoulish boyfriend.
You don't know how many times people have sent me messages and are screaming at me that I need to stop.
But you know what? Any listeners out there that have any advice for Britt on her little situation, we would love to hear it.
On my ghost boy romance. It's like one of my one of my dime store romance novels.
Oh my gosh.
Oh god, guys. Anyways, so before we dive into the whole true crime thing, I do have some spooky updates, you know, a little bit of spooky stuff. So just so you guys know, I actually have a friend who sent me this.
You have a friend?
I do. I finally have a friend, guys. I finally have a friend.
Okay.
So he actually sent me, he messaged me. And he wrote to me and told me this really cool and scary and absolutely terrifying experiences that he's been having. So
I'm excited. I haven't heard these stories.
She has not. Anticipation. Keeping them to myself. Anyways, so his name, we're going to call him Cold because that's what the username that he sent me was. It was Cold Healer. So that was his username. Anyways, that's what he messaged me as. So he actually sent me this really crazy story about, this is what he told me. So he works in the nighttime, and he told me he's been getting some weird vibes from his job. Very creepy, very scary. He actually lives in a rural area of Texas. And as you guys, I don't know if any of you guys know, but I used to live in Texas. And let me tell you right now, it's pretty creepy.
Oh, man. Yeah. If this is a Texas story, I already know it's going to be a trip.
So, okay. So he was telling me that as he was walking into his work job, it was at nighttime, very, very, very night, dark, dead of dark. Anyways, that he said that as he was opening up his door to his workplace, behind him, like across from his job, is like kind of like a cornfield. So you like, it's really foggy and it's super creepy. But not enough to, like, really... he sent me a picture of it. Maybe I'll post it for you guys so you guys can kind of see where he was coming from. There was, like, a little small set of bushes, but, like, not enough to actually crouch and hide behind. And what he had told me was that he was opening the door to his work. He just had the feeling of him being watched. So he turns around, and he sees the silhouette of someone crouched in the field.
Hell no.
Yeah, no, he saw it crouched in the field behind him, and he was like, okay, well, I'm going to hurry up and get my ass inside of his job. So he goes and he opens the door, and he takes one look back, and this thing was now standing. And he said that it was over 7 feet tall.
What the fuck?
Yep.
Yep. Did he go inside? Like, what
happened?
Hell
yeah, he went inside. What the heck?
Oh, shit.
Yeah. He said it was so... It was really...
Hell no.
It was really creepy. But, you know, he said that he saw the silhouette of a person that was just standing there.
So it was just, like, a really tall person?
He said... I mean, I don't know. He said it was really skinny and really tall. But it didn't look like it had clothes. It just looked like this, like, dark silhouette. And if you know me, anything with silhouettes freaks me the fuck out because of that experience I had with the Ouija board and the guy with the long hair. Creepy as shit, guys. Yeah.
What do you think it is, Britt? 7 feet tall, skinny, no clothes, like an alien?
Yeah.
Oh, but aren't aliens supposed to be short?
But he said after he saw that, he started getting a lot of weird paranormal shit happening at his house. He was telling me that one time he was playing video games and his door opens from the inside. And he said as he was sitting there, he heard, like, the door handle jiggle. And it was like something had opened the door from the inside. So it opened towards him. And the door just opened up very slowly. Like someone was kind of leaning their head in. But there was no one there. And he quite clearly saw the door open. No one's on the other side. And then it closed.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Ghosts just, like...
Oh, yep.
They're just naturally so creepy.
And then he'd tell me, like, other weird things that happened at his job was one day, like, after everything had happened with the large, crazy, skinny, weird-shaped person that's 7 feet tall, probably a model, looking for some food, a runaway model. Anyways, so he said he actually saw a face in one of the windows. That was one thing that also happened. He saw a shadow person from the upstairs looking down at the workplace. That's the second one. And the third one, he saw a box being violently moving up and down, like it was slamming into a locker over and over again.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Wherever this guy is, he has to get out. Like, I would have gone, like, right after seeing something abnormally large, I would have been like, all right, Texas, see you later.
Yeah, later, bitch.
Gotta go.
But yeah, I mean, it was really creepy. I told him, I'm like, you know what, dude, like, start carrying some holy water, get some sage up in that bitch, you know, you really,
lots of prayer,
because that's some shit.
Damn. Well, I'm very glad that he sent that in.
Yes.
That was chilling.
It's very, very creepy. I mean, I'm always glad to get these kind of stories. Like, it's been a rough road for me, guys. You gotta understand.
How is this a true crime episode and we keep going back to the paranormal?
It's just before we always start, we always do a little something, you know, before everything.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure, for sure. Anyways, look, guys, if you have any spooky, scary stories, please feel free to send them on in. We love them. We appreciate them. There's nothing else that we love more than freaking scary ass stories and reading them in the middle of the night. Anyway, so this is like one of the stories that someone did send in to us. If you guys have any more, you could send it to our Instagram. You could send us a DM. We have a Facebook group. We also have Twitter. We're always accepting things on Twitter. And then we actually made us a Tumblr if you guys have Tumblr as well.
Yes. Don't forget to send them in. But with all that being said, are you ready to get into some murder?
I love murder. I mean...
Okay. Little FBI guy on the other side of your webcam, like, sat up a little straighter, and he's like, excuse me?
Excuse me?
You like, what?
Excuse me? I like how you said he... At least he's polite, right? At least he's a polite guy.
Yeah. Got some character.
I want to call him Hamilton.
Hamilton. If he's working for the FBI, he probably already has a name.
No, his name is Hamilton.
Okay.
Ooh, or Benji. Benjo. I like Benjo.
Okay. Anyways, we'll do that then.
Okay, so I guess since you went first last time, right? Or did I go first last time?
I think I did.
Okay, so...
I'm excited to hear yours.
I will go first this time. So I do like... I know I said that we were going to do, like, true crime, but I picked a crime, a murder that was... a satanic ritual. Ooh, supposed. And it's fairly recent. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it takes place in Russia.
Ooh. Foreign. Interesting.
Yes. Foreign. Scary. Russian. Vodka.
Russian ghouls.
Okay. So, these... one of the latest, like, unexplained and mysterious killings in Russia is now connected to one of Russia's largest banks. That was one of the... That was the header that got me. But this new allegation or whatever, this new murder that happened, they believe it was a satanic ritual that might have been involved, you know, something a little sinister going on. So I'm going to totally butcher these names, but, you know, bear with me because...
That's okay.
I don't speak Russian and I probably will get all these wrong. So the first girl, her name was Ksenia Soltanova, and she was 29. The second woman was Natalia Kuznetsova, and she was 28. And they were actually found dead after going out for a late night pizza together near Yekaterinburg.
You picked the story with, like, the hardest name.
Yekaterinburg, Russia. Yekaterinburg. I am saying this so wrong. Anyways, so these two women were found murdered after trying to go... They were just trying to get their pizza on, just trying to get their grubs. Both women were last seen walking, laughing, having a good old time together on August 25th, heading to a local park to enjoy their pizza together. And, you know, supposedly to watch the sunrise, but, you know... Who the hell eats pizza at sunrise? Suspicious. Suspicious.
Yeah.
But that's when things kind of got a little strange. So both women were shot to dead. Shot to dead, Jesse. They were shot to dead. They were shot to death at close range. After which the bodies were dragged into a nearby forest where they were discovered days later. CCTV footage from a nearby camera caught the shooting and reportedly shows a man wearing a headlamp, which just, like, perfectly obscures his face from the camera.
A headlamp?
He was wearing a freaking headlamp.
Interesting.
Yes.
Is that common in Russia?
I just thought it was so weird. Okay, so pretty much, you know, like, murders, you know, unsolved murders. Okay, that's one thing. But, like, I guess the comments that were made by the local law enforcement officials seemed, like, maybe to suggest that there was more to, like, this than, like, just a random act of violence. In a press release from the local law enforcement official Valentin Degtyovoy, it's Degtyovoy, he claims that the spot where the women were killed has been, like, a really big hotspot for any kind of, like, satanic ceremonies since the Soviet era. And it's rumored to be the site of an ancient pagan temple.
Wow, Soviet pagan.
I know, right? According to Valentin, the women may have been lured to the spot by a Satanist group or accidentally came across a satanic ritual that was in progress, which involved a guy with a lamp shade over his head.
So he went after them while they were eating pizza and shot them?
Yes, with the lamp shade over his head.
Lamp shade.
Well, it was like a lamp. What was it? Like a head shade, a headlamp over his head.
Okay, headlamp. Okay, that's two different stories in my head. I was picturing, like, you know, the lampshade from A Christmas Story?
Yeah.
I was thinking that over his head. Like some guy at a wild party and they put, like, lampshades on
his head. That's what I thought it was.
Okay, but it's not.
Oh, right? It's a headlamp.
It's a headlamp. Yeah, okay, it's those a headlamp. Are two different stories. Am I like, crazy guy who parties? Or, like, a minor?
What's going on? It was a minor.
A minor 49er.
It's like Clue, but without, like, Mrs. Peacock.
Okay.
And a gun. Oh, wait, there was a gun in Clue, wasn't there?
Yeah.
It was also a toaster. That's Monopoly, never mind. No. Was there a...
Yeah, that's Monopoly.
Okay, anyways, back to the story, okay? Anyways, okay, so...
Man was not a lampshade.
Not a lampshade. It was a headlamp. A headlamp on his head. Anyways, Valentin claims that other nearby CCTV cameras filmed strange figures dressed in white coats. carrying around torches and holding a mysterious ceremony and amid pouring rain at the time of the murders. So, this is what I thought was weird. So, first off, there's a guy with a headlamp on his head. Two girls with pizza trying to watch the sunrise. And strange white figures dressed in white coats carrying torches and holding a ceremony.
They know that there were people holding a ceremony?
Yeah.
Damn.
And then, this gets creepy, the story was made even stranger by the fact that one of the women worked for a Sberbank, which is the largest state-owned in Russia, and was reportedly under investigation by Moscow banking officials, with so many unexplained killings of Russian bankers, politicians, and military officials, there's no telling what this murder may mean. Like, it could be a random act of violence, or it could indeed be a part of some weird satanic ritual. Not sure. But then again, like, the whole satanic ritual story may be, like, gaslighted to distract the fact that someone with, like, inside knowledge of the geopolitical financial shenanigans was gunned down before she could spill the beans, Banks.
Damn. Good cover, though.
I know, right? Like...
like, let's just be outrageous. Let's say she was killed by Satanists.
Satanists, and like,
And everyone's like, what? Can't dispute that.
Yeah, but it's pretty crazy. Like, she could have spilled the beans on the banks and all their bad stuff, and they might have just killed her. Or, like, crazy satanic cult. It's kind of hard. Like, there's no real in-between from there, you know, cult or our government. Cult.
Honestly?
But well, not our government.
It sounds like she was, like, gunned down or something. Like, they're trying to, like, prove a point and shot her up.
Okay, but what about the CCTV footage of the people having... what if the people were having a ritual and they're trying to make it seem like they were the ones who murdered her, but it was actually the Russian government?
Wow. Trying to put it cover
and on they the were Satanists. Like, the Satanists...
Satanists carrying guns.
The Satanists were like, yo, man, we were just trying to chill. Like, we were just trying to, you know, summon some demons. You know, we heard that girl from Ghoul Girls got herself a demon and we want a piece of that.
Oh, my gosh. We
want a piece of that demon booty.
Okay.
Oh, man, I make light of these situations because I'm going through some very demonic stuff in my house, and it makes me feel better to know that I can laugh about it.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway, so that was my story from Russia. Now on to the real main header that I really wanted to talk about. And let's see if you've ever heard of this story, serial killer that was not caught. So, He goes by two names. You could either call him the Cleveland Torso Murderer, or, this is my favorite, actually, the Mad Butcher of Kingsbury Run.
Ooh.
And he was an unidentified serial killer who was active in Cleveland, Ohio. Cleveland, Ohio! Remember from That 70s Show? Yeah. That was in the 1930s. The killings were defined pretty much by the dismemberment of 12 known victims and the disposal of their remains in the impoverished neighborhood of Kingsbury Run.
Twelve of them.
Despite like all the investigations of the murders, which at one time had led a famed lawman and Cleveland's then public safety director Elliot Ness, the murder was never caught.
How do you not catch a guy who throws out 12 torsos?
Yeah, I know. Like, you know what? It's the 1930s. It was the 12 known victims were killed between 1935 and 1938. Which, you know, I mean, it's understandable. Some people believe...
it's understandable to find 12 torsos.
You know what? Some people believe that there may have been 13 or more victims from Cleveland, Youngstown, to even Pittsburgh, between the the era of 1920s to the 1950s. So, you know, I mean, it could happen.
Oh, that's crazy.
I know. So, the victims of the torso murder were usually drifters who were, like, never really identified. Although, I think there were, like, a few exceptions. I think the second, third, and eighth bodies were identified as, let me see. I have the names right here. I gotta, you know, smudge them and smudge them. Edward Adrassi was number two. Florence Polio was the third victim, and possibly Rose Wallace was the eighth. victim.
Damn, how do you identify people from just their torsos?
I think some have, like, body parts. I mean, you know, some were just not as badly, like, you know. And most of them were drifters. He would kill drifters, you know, people who didn't really have a lot of families who were just, yeah, you know, trying to get by. Mainly, all the victims were of lower class society. So, you know, they were easy to prey on, like, post-Depression era Cleveland. Many of them were known as, like, working poor, and they lived in the shanty towns known as the Cleveland Flats. The torso murderer always beheaded and often dismembered his victims, occasionally severing the torso in half, or severing their appendages. So, like, cut off a couple arms, a couple toes, maybe a whole leg. You know, or, like, in many of the cases, the cause of death was decapitation or the dismemberment themselves. Most...
Well, they're still alive?
Yeah, I know. I'm so sorry. I picked the most nastiest one. most of the male victims were castrated. There you go, men. Boys. Some victims showed evidence of chemical treatment being applied to their bodies as well. Many of the victims were found after a considerable period of time following their death. So they usually were found, you know, after they'd been dead for a cool minute.
A cool minute. No pun intended. Oh, my God.
No.
That's gruesome. So this sicko would pick up these transients and, like, perform these procedures? Like, did he at least have, like, a clean cut, or?
It was bad.
Ugh.
So,
what the fuck is up with the people in the 1930s? Jesus.
So, out of the 12 bodies that were recovered, I'm gonna tell you a little something about each body that was recovered. So, the first body that was recovered was Edward Adrassi. He was found on September 23rd, 1935. He was found in Kingsbury Run as well. Adrassi was found lying about 30 feet from John Doe, which is the next victim I'm going to tell you about. He had been decapitated and emasculated, and his head was recovered, but it wasn't with his body at the time. He had possibly been dead for about 2 to 3 days, and that was September 1935. And they believe that was the second murder. The next murder, they call him John Doe 1. Same date, he was found September 23rd, 1935, same place, Kingsbury Run. The male body was never identified. He was also emasculated and decapitated. The head was recovered. The skin was treated with a chemical agent that caused it to become reddish and leathery. Yeah, initial estimates were that he was dead probably between 7 to 10 days, and it was later, after a while, was revised to actually be over 3 to 4 weeks he was already dead.
Shit.
We're barely at number 3, Jess. We've got a couple more to go.
Oh, my God. Let me mentally prepare myself.
At least you're not looking at the pictures, because I'm looking at the pictures right now. And let me tell you right now.
Do not send me that link. Do not.
We might post them on Instagram, because I love posting stuff on Instagram, so.
Oh. All right.
Okay.
Ahead,
just don't flag those pictures, okay, Jess? I swear. I won't put the nasty ones. Just, like, you know. Anyways, Florence Grievance Polio, alias was Martin. She was actually discovered January 26th to February 7th. So that's when, like, all her body parts were found. That's why there's two dates. She was found in a street in downtown Cleveland and Orange Avenue. Her body had been dismembered and the head was never recovered. She'd been dead about 2 to 4 days. That murder, they dated possibly January 1936. She was the third possible victim. Number 4 was John Doe number 2, a.k.a. the Tattooed Man. He was found June 5th. He was found in Kingsbury Run. The victim was decapitated while alive, but his head was recovered. He had been dead for 2 days. Number 5, John Doe number 3, July 22nd. 1936. He was found in the Big Creek area of Brooklyn, west of Cleveland. The victim was also dismembered while still alive. His head was recovered. The unidentified male's body was the only known victim on the only known west side victim. So no other bodies were recovered on the west side. They believe he had been dead for 2 months. John Doe number 4, September 10th, 1936, also Kingsbury Run. Only half the torso was found. Nothing remained below the hips. The head was never found, nor the body identified. And he had been dead for 2 days. Number 7 is Jane Doe the first Jane Doe. February 23rd, only a couple days before my birthday, 1937. She was found in Ulliken Beach on the Lake Erie shore. Lake Erie. Is that a creepy place to discover a body? Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's Erie. Get it?
Oh, I got it. Oh my God, you're so clever. The unidentified female body was found at the same spot as the 1934 non-canonical victim, nicknamed the Lady of the Lake. The head was never found. She was dead 3 to 4 days. The next one is Jane Doe number 2. She was also found June 6, 1937, beneath the Lorraine Carnage Bridge. She was the only African-American victim. The body was decapitated and she was missing a rib. The head was actually recovered. She had been dead for a whole year. Damn. Under the bridge. Yeah, I know. John Doe number 5 was July 3rd, 1937. I know, I'm almost done. I'm almost there. He was pulled out of the Canoga River in the Cleveland Flats. The body of this male was recovered, but the head was never found. So he had been dead for 2 to 3 days. Jane Doe number 3, April 8th, 1938. Canoga River in the Cleveland Flats. This one is a long one. On April 8th, only the victim's legs were recovered. On May 2nd, the human thigh was discovered floating in the river to the east of the West 3rd Street Bridge. A police searched under the bridge and found a burlap sack that contained the victim's headless torso cut in two halves. Another thigh, a left foot, and the head and the rest of the body were never found. The victim, the only victim to have drugs in her system. She had been dead about 3 to 5 days. Two more, Jesse.
This guy just tossed bodies left and right, and nobody finds him. Like, he's literally, in a span of a couple years, he's, like, torturing all of these people.
Yeah, look, here's the, only two more, Jess, only two more.
I'm pissed.
Jane Doe number 4, August 16th, 1939. She was found in East 9th Street Lakeshore Dump. Decapitated female body, the head was recovered. 4 to 6 months she had been dead. Number 12. Jane Doe, number 6, August 16th, 1939, East 9th Street, Lakeshore Dump as well. This one was discovered at the same time as Jane Doe, number 5. The male was decapitated. The male had a decapitated body. The head was found in a can, and the victim was never identified. He'd been dead for 7 to 9 months.
Shit.
Yep.
How does this happen?
Yep.
Like, that is so many bodies.
That's a lot of bodies.
And that's just the ones that they found.
Yeah. There was a couple of people that they actually, like, suspected. One of the persons that they mainly expected was a Cleveland resident by the name of Frank Dozal. He was 52. He was actually arrested in the Florence polio murder, which I think was, like, the second or third murder. But he later died in suspicious circumstances in the Canoga County Jail.
They didn't find his torso?
No, he died in prison, but suspiciously. Yeah. Suspicious. The other one that I thought was really interesting that they once suspect that, like, they really thought was it, was Dr. Francis Sweeney. Sweeney was a veteran of World War I. He was part of the medical unit, which would also kind of explain how he would have anatomy, you know, knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
Because some of them were, like, to decapitate a head clean off, that's a pretty good skill. He was actually interviewed by Elliot Ness, who oversaw the official investigations into the killings in his captivity as the Cleveland safety director. During the interrogation, Sweeney is said to have failed to pass two to every early polygraph machine test. So it was like in the beginning, but he failed. But you know what? Those things aren't that reliable anyways. Nevertheless, Ness apparently felt there was a little chance of obtaining a successful prosecution of the doctor, especially as he was the first cousin of one of Ness's political opponents, Congressman Martin L. Sweeney, who had hounded Ness publicly about his failure to catch the killer. So, after Sweeney committed himself, there was no more leads or connections that police could assign to him, you know, as a possible suspect from the hospital, like confinement threatening postcards with Sweeney's name mocked and harassed Ness and his family in the 1950s. Sweeney died in the Veterans Hospital in Dayton, 1964.
Damn.
Yeah. So those are some of the some creepy murders, you know. I really liked that story because it had murder and death and unsolved mysteries. Makes you wonder who your neighbors are. Isn't that right, Jess?
Hell yeah. Oh my gosh. That was so gross.
Guys, in case you haven't noticed, like, I'm all down for the gore, but, you know, Jessica's not.
My moral compass is just a little stronger.
Jess is not feeling it. She don't like that kind of stuff, you know?
You know what? It's super interesting. Super tragic, but also, like, you wonder, like, the thoughts that go through that whole community when left and right they're just finding bodies,
right?
Also, just like the other Texas story, these people should move, just get out of there.
Yeah, stop living in area. Well, they were poor, so how are they supposed to move?
I know, I'm sorry,
help me, I'm poor. That's me right there. That's I tell people that all the time. I'm like, help me, I'm poor.
Just like that, same voice.
Yeah, exactly.
I see it.
People are like, oh, you want something from the vending machines? I'm like, help me, I'm poor.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways, yeah, those were the Kingsbury run.
Well, thank Mad you for Butcher. Sharing, because those will stick with me for a while.
I hope they do. This is all I asked for.
But also, for my story that we're going to get into, I also have a small paranormal connection.
Ooh, so, I love it. I love it.
You ready?
I'm so... Hit me with that paranormal shit, girl.
All right. So, this is actually a pretty popular murder. A lot of people know about it. But in case you haven't heard of it, it's called the New Orleans Rampant Street Murder House. So this is a story about Zach and Addie. This was also featured on Paranormal Lockdown with Nick Groff from Ghost Adventures. So a few of you might have heard it already. But the Rampant Street Murder House is in New Orleans. And the people who lived there were Zach and Addie. Now, Zach was... you know, Addie's boyfriend. The couple had fallen in love. But before they had met Zach and Addie, Zach had actually married a stripper and lived with her two kids. He went to join the army to help support his family. He did two tours, one in Iraq, and then he came back, had a falling out with his wife, and then he met Addie. They were both bartenders at a bar in New Orleans. And this is where it gets kind of crazy. So in October 2006, Addie Hall and Zach Bowen were madly in love, and during that horrible devastation of Hurricane Katrina, they actually moved into an apartment in the city as well. It's called the Voodoo Spiritual Temple, so this is where the paranormal comes
Ooh.
In. They lived on the floor above that temple.
I love it. Oh my god. So they lived, like, above the Voodoo Temple?
Yeah. So underneath it was the shrine.
Okay. That's so creepy, but I love it.
And you know what? A lot of people want to try, like, saying that because they lived on that second floor of the apartment, they're saying that kind of, like, explains what happens in the story. But just keep in mind, a lot of people think that because it was above the Voodoo Spiritual Temple, that it was in connection to the crazy shit that happened. So, during Hurricane Katrina, Zach and Addie refused to leave their apartment. They stayed there during the hurricane, during the flood.
Holy shit.
It was crazy. Yeah. So, a bunch of news outlets actually, like, talked about them, showed images of this couple. Because a lot of people left, a few stayed, and they were just ones of them. And they were saying that during Zach and Addie's stay, they lived days without electricity. They were just feeding stray cats, and they were just... And one story report said they were swapping booze for water.
Booze for water?
They had, like, a bunch of alcohol, and they would trade it with the other people who stayed behind, and they would get, like, water.
You want some beer? Give me your water, bitch.
Yeah, and, you know, Zach and Addie were a little popular at that point, after Hurricane Katrina, during the floods, because what Addie would do is every time the police would drive by or their vehicles would pass by to try to check on them, Addie would go to the window and flash her breasts at the police vehicles.
What?
And that's what she was known for.
Why? She would just, like, give them a little show.
Yeah, you know what? They were young. They were bartenders. They're in New Orleans. What, like, that's kind of, like, the spirit of this couple. They're, like, kind of wild.
Yeah, they're fucking wild. Like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Give the girl some water.
I know, right? So, after moving into their new apartment, they had reports of being constantly in fights, drunken arguments. Zach started drinking and doing drugs. Addie the same. And family and friends, like, all made these reports that their relationship was getting rocky. You know, fast forward a little while later, Zach committed suicide by jumping off the Omni Rural Orleans Hotel.
Oh, shit.
After having a week of partying and doing drugs and hanging out with friends. Mm-mm. So when the investigators found Zach's body after he jumped out of the hotel, they found a note and his apartment keys. And in the note, which I'm going to read from, it says very specifically at the top, for police only. The first line says, "This is not accidental. I had to take my own life to pay for the one I took. If you send a patrol car to 826 N Rampant, which is his apartment, you will find the dismembered corpse of my girlfriend Addie in the oven, shit, on the stove, and in the fridge, along with full documentation on the both of us and a full signed confession from myself. My keys in my right front pocket are for the gates. Call Leo Watermeyer to let you in. Zach Bowen."
No fucking way. He, like, just... At least he was polite about it.
Okay, so that's where it gets a little crazy. So, detectives read the note, they get his keys, the man that he had listed in the note is actually the apartment manager, the apartment building manager. So, he got them into the apartment. Once they walk in, they realize, like, what the hell they got into. So, there's spray paint all over the walls.
What the hell?
There's just blood, and it's just a gruesome crime scene. So, there's two pots that were sitting on top of the stove. One had Addie's head. The other pot had her hands and her feet.
Oh, God, really?
Uh-huh, yep. And spray painted on the wall, just by it, says, "Please call my wife. I love her. I am a total failure. Look in the oven. Please help me stop the pain."
Are you serious? Ew. Is it, it was spray painted?
Spray painted,
what,
yeah.
What color?
He went on a bender. It was red.
Ooh, that's so creepy.
Yeah, he went on, like, a bender, and he killed her, and they found her body parts, some in the fridge, some in the oven, and what they had determined was he wasn't trying to eat her, like a lot of reports say. He was, at first... They discovered after, you know, deducing a bunch of stuff, that they believe Addie may have accused Zach of cheating, and during an argument, they say that he might have strangled her.
Oh, wow.
Yes, they think he strangled her in her bathtub, and he spent the next couple days cutting up her body with the intent to cook it.
Ew!
So the meat from her body will just fall off the bone. So it's easier to, like, dispose of evidence.
Oh, so he wasn't trying to eat her. He was just trying to...
He wasn't trying to eat her, but what they kind of determined was...
He was crazy.
Yeah, like, he had a breakdown. So halfway through getting rid of her, they said that he felt an extreme amount of remorse and went on a bender and then killed himself. Like, at first, he was like, "I'm gonna cook her, I'm gonna get rid of this, I'm gonna clean this all up." And then he was kind of like, "Fuck it, I can't live with it." Went a week of just doing drugs and drinking and hanging out with friends. Then he took one last drink at the hotel, climbed up the building, jumped off and killed himself.
Oh,
full confession and everything. Fuck. Yeah.
I mean... Ew, he was gonna eat her.
He wasn't gonna eat her. He was trying to separate her meat from the bones so he can get rid of
the evidence. Telling me that he wasn't going to eat her. Like, come on, you know,
he wasn't going to eat her.
There's easier ways to dispose of a body.
Well, having never had to dispose of a body before, I'm sure he was improvising.
He was improvising. He was just improvising. It's cool.
There's a lot of theories as to what might have happened. They think he snapped. There's reports that saying that Addie was abusive, that she would get physical and always trying to fight, and that Zach had PTSD and leftover issues from his two tours in the army, yeah. One in Iraq. And, you know, his wife left him, and he's bartending, and he meets this young girl, so it's like a whole mess. And he was dishonorably discharged.
And oh, do we know why he was dishonorably discharged?
No, I don't know. But he did get, like, a lot of awards when he was in the army. But yeah, he was discharged, and then he went back to New Orleans. You know, people say that he was, like, an okay-looking guy, he was charming, and, you know, from there he started bartending, and that's when he met Addie. So he wrote in his suicide note that he had 28 cigarette burns on his body to mark his failures for every year in his life. So for school, for jobs, for military, marriage, parenthood, love, morals.
Was he doing it for himself or did someone else do it to him?
For himself. Like, he thought he was such a fuck up that he would burn himself with cigarettes for every year that he's ever lived.
That's really creepy. And sad. Very sad. And mental health is so important, guys.
Oh, yeah. And you can see that in his suicide note that after he had killed Addie, he continued to go to work, he ran errands, and he spent $1,500 on strippers, food, and drugs. Yeah. He said, I scared myself, not by the action of calmly strangling the women I loved for 1.5 years, but my entire lack of remorse.
Oh, wow. That's really crazy.
And then he went on a bender, and then he killed himself.
Yeah. Oh, it's sad, but it's also very, 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 like, a very harsh reality of it. You know, mental illnesses.
Of mental health, yeah. And this guy just, like, was so detached. And they made if you're, like, super interested in the story, they made a documentary in 2014 called Zach and Addie that kind of explores what, you know, their relationship before the event and what happens. And it also kind of gets a little paranormal when they talk about them living above the voodoo spiritual temple. But I gotta argue, you know, voodoo spiritual temples are supposed to be super sacred and positive.
No, I that's what I've heard. Yeah, like, during this whole, like, true crime thing that we were going through, I was actually reading, like, a lot of interesting articles, like, about murders and stuff like that, or people, like, serial killers and shit, and it was really funny. I mean, it's not funny to be murdered. Murder is never a laughing matter, but the weirdest thing is that a lot of famous, like, a lot of serial killers that didn't get caught for, like, the longest time were serial killers with some of the lowest IQs. Wow. Yeah, the was it BTK killer, the serial killer? He only had an IQ of, like, 70.
Really?
Damn. Yeah. He had a very, very low IQ, and that was because it was, for those, like, serial killers, it was more like they wouldn't have motives, they would just kill. You know what I mean? They didn't really plan it out. It wasn't like this, like, a lot of serial killers, like, if you watch, like, TV shows and shit like that, they're always, like Hannibal. Okay, take Hannibal, for instance. He had, like, the strategic, like, fucking, I don't know if you guys have ever seen that show Hannibal, but he's, like, the super smart guy, and he would murder people with, like, symbolism and, you know, all that other shit. Nowadays, it's super easy to, like, to track that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? But if you just have this guy that's just going around killing because he's, you know, kind of off, you know, he doesn't really have any motive aside from the fact that he's suffering from, like, mental illness or whatever, it's a lot harder to kind of track those type of cases.
Yeah, because it's so erratic.
Yeah.
Damn. Well, if you want to hear something even creepier, so have you ever heard of Margaret Sanchez?
No.
She's another important part to the story. Addie's best friend, the girl who was murdered, is Margaret Sanchez. And so the film that I was talking about, it's really hard to find because Margaret Sanchez, Addie's best friend, they interviewed her in the film. And it turns out that her best friend was also a murderer.
What? What, have like a... What?
Yeah. So when Addie was murdered and they're doing the documentary in 2014, their best friend, they interviewed her. She said some things about Addie being dismembered and so sad and stuff like that. Fast forward, she ends up being convicted because her and her boyfriend killed a woman named Jaren Lockhart.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Jaren was actually also dismembered. And so in the film, when Margaret Sanchez is talking about how Addie was dismembered, she was kind of like, people say she was kind of like hollow-eyed because she had just dismembered another woman.
What the? That's so fucking weird.
Yeah. So a little like chilling fact out there. So if you do see it, you'll get to see that part exclusively. But yeah, that's the Rampant Street Murder House. And it's nuts. It really is. I mean, it's not like your torso story, but there's just like all these factors and things that are still aren't really answered. But it's kind of crazy how he just like left a full note of what happened, what he did, and what he did.
All of a sudden gained remorse. Yeah, I mean, like, it's always like really crazy. Like, take Ted Bundy, who, like, he started killing in his late 20s, and he was, like, totally opposite of what you would expect from a serial killer, because he was so attractive, and he was so charming, and he was so, like, intelligent. But 9 times out of 10, that's not, you know, that's not how most serial killers are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was, like, reading all these, like, statistics, and from, like, 1990 to 2010, which is, like, I guess most recent in, like, the database or whatever, but 52.1% of U.S. serial killers were white, while 40% were black, and, like, pretty much they said, like, internationally, that doesn't change much. Like, I think internationally it's, like, 56.2% are white, while, like, 30% are black. And what they define serial killer as is killing one or two people, like, at least two people, in two separate instances with like a cooling off period in between. That pretty much identifies what a serial killer is.
Well, white people have it. It's called colonialism.
Right? Some other like really kind of interesting statistics that they said were, let's see. So male, 92.30% were male. 52.45% percent were white. Mid to late 20s was 27%. White male 46.9%, and white male mid to late 20s was 12.57%.
Damn.
You know, the average serial killer has an IQ score of 94.7. That's usually average for a serial killer. Like, some would have, you know, higher IQs, but, you know, it's like average. They're just average. They're not like they're super genius, like amazing.
I also heard that serial killers, a really common thing about serial killers is that most of them start off by torturing animals before they move to people.
Yeah, I heard about that too. Another statistic was that, hold on. Okay. I'm sorry. Here it is. 85.6% come from homes with at least one biological parent. So they're not broken families. Throughout their family life, it was likely very unstable. While 70% reported no abuse as children, many actually wet the bed, tortured animals, and started fires.
Damn.
40.5% kill for enjoyment, such as lust, thrill, or power.
Don't they also have, like, mommy issues?
Yeah, most of the time.
I heard that serial killers, like, they have unnatural or, like, unusual relationships with their moms.
Yeah, I've heard about that, too.
Damn.
Yeah. It's really creepy. But those are some serial killer statistics.
Ugh. So gross. So gross. If you're a serial killer, don't contact me. We're good.
Unless
no,
you want to be on our podcast. I'm just kidding. Don't go around killing people for the podcast, guys.
You're already trying to get your ghost boyfriend on the podcast. I can only handle one thing per episode. Okay.
You know what? That's true. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Middle ground.
But yeah, like I was saying, I personally don't, I mean, I like true crime. Don't get me wrong. I like more of like the unsolved murders and stuff like that because like, I don't know. It always makes you wonder who is that next door neighbor that seems kind of off, you know?
That's why I don't talk to my neighbors.
What do you mean you don't talk to your neighbors?
I'm like a hermit in my building. I don't think anyone's ever seen me.
Max actually met one of our neighbors at the gym the other day. He got stabbed, so he was like rehabilitating himself.
Aww, what?
He's a really nice guy.
All right, well, prayers out for him.
Prayers out for homies. Anyways, guys, though, that was our serial killer murder mayhem spooky episode.
We hope you enjoyed.
And you know what I just realized? We didn't even say the name of this episode, Jess.
Did we not?
We didn't.
Oh my god. Okay, Brittany, and the name of this episode is...
You came up with the name, Jess.
Did I? Oh, yes, I did. The name for this episode is In for the Kill.
In for the Kill, guys. This is a podcast. Sometimes we make mistakes. It's okay. Just throwing that out there.
You know, we're the diamonds in the rough. You know, you gotta stick with
us. We are the diamonds in the rough. I'm the diamond, Jess is the rough. I'm just kidding. Anyways, guys. Be sure to check out our Instagram for some really cool, you know, posts. We post a lot of really cool shit on there. I love it. Like, check out our last post. We got a lot of really good topics. You guys comment on them. Let us know what you guys think. We have that. We have Facebook, our Facebook group. We have Twitter. We made a Tumblr. Also, you guys can follow us on Patreon. Help support the podcast. You could even submit any donations that you guys have through Anchor, which is our podcast app. Just be sure to leave a nice review on iTunes if you guys can. We would really appreciate it. We love getting reviews. We like to read them when we feel a little bit sad. I
know. People say such nice things. I'm like, oh,
you guys are so sweet. You know, if we get more reviews, maybe I can convince Jessica to play the Ouija board with me.
Up for debate,
guys.
We'll see.
Anyways, like I said, be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Send us some more scary stories. We really like it. That one from Cold was really, really good. It freaked me out.
Thank you.
I was very scared of that. Now I'm like, I go to work really early in the morning, so it's really dark outside, and I'm gonna be looking over my shoulder for a 7 foot tall weird Wendigo looking creature.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that's it. We're signing off. Bye.
All right. See you next time.
Bye.